Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And I'm excited to have my next guest in the studio. It's been a while. We go way back to a time when my hair was black. none other than Mr. Mark Rice of Wisdom. How you doing, sir?
Good. How have you been?
I'm doing fine. I really am, man. It's I've been trying to get you in for a while because of what you do and what you stand for. Let's talk a little bit about who Mark Rice is.
Right now, I'm serving as the Wisconsin Transformational Justice Campaign Coordinator with Wisdom. I'm also a member of EXPO, Ex-Incarcerated People Organizing, an organization led by formerly incarcerated people. This is a statewide organization in Wisconsin. And the Transformational Justice Campaign right now is focused on advancing racial justice in Wisconsin. We have a primary focus of dismantling structural racism. We've always been dedicated and We're aiming to cut the state's prison population in half, and we're also aiming to cut the number of people under supervision in half in the state. And we also do rights restoration work, and we do a lot on correcting the narrative, too, with the focus on humanizing people who have conviction and arrest records. We want to ensure that all people with records are viewed as human beings, assets to the community and members of families.
You know, Mark, you've been at this for some time now. How long have you been at this?
I've been organizing since 2008. Originally got involved with ACORN, national organization, and been involved with Wisdom now for almost 10 years. Originally got involved with the 11 by 15 campaign. That was the campaign that aimed to cut the state's prison population in half to 11,000 by the end of 2015. Then it was renamed Rock Wisconsin, Restoring Our Communities, in 2015, and then that same campaign is now called Transformational Justice. So we've gone through three different name changes, but still working on a lot of the same goals. And it's expanded. Right now we've got also the Free Campaign, a campaign led by formerly incarcerated women, which has come on the scene recently within the last 5-6 years. So definitely excited to see so many formerly incarcerated women getting involved and really working to build power and create positive changes in the community.
So did you fall down out of heaven to do this kind of work? I mean, what's your background?
Yeah, I'm directly impacted. The state of Wisconsin forced me to spend a few years in the state prison system back in 99 and 2000. And I had a very long supervision sentence when I got out, 12 years. So I really witnessed the deep racial injustice within the system. It was a very eye-opening experience for me because coming in the prison system when I was younger, I was in a place called Racine Youthful Offender Correctional Facility. We don't use the word offender, but right. We're trying to stop that. It's a dehumanizing, offensive term, but that's the official name of that place. But we're focused on making a change to people-centered language, so we use terms like formerly incarcerated people, people with conviction records, those sorts of terms that really lead with people and humanize those with conviction records. But to get back to the story, I spent a couple years in the state prison system and met many young guys coming in, young black and brown and native right. men who had very long prison sentences, 20, 30 years, and many of them had convictions less serious than my own. So there is where I witnessed the deep racial injustice in the system, as I said. And when I got out, I eventually had the 12 years of supervision, so I became familiar with the issue of crimeless revocations, what we call it, where I was sent back to jail and MSDF on three different occasions for allegedly violating rules of supervision that did not involve any new convictions. And that's a issue that Wisdom and Expo and other organizations have really been pushing. We've made some progress, particularly with this administration. There's been some administrative policy changes made, and we launched a campaign that aimed to depopulate and close Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility. That was one of the huge campaigns, and the population at Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility was cut by more than half during the pandemic. It was down to about a third of what it was before. At one point, the population was down to about 400 people, and previously there was typically at least 1,100 people, sometimes 1,200 more, overcrowded.
So what is it today? Is it crime is it's got to be back up there again, huh?
It's still about half of what it used to be. It fluctuates a little bit. It's been fluctuating up and down, but they have been able to keep that particular population down at MSDF. But we're definitely concerned with the new administration. If there's some sort of change in the administration, they could continue to fill it up. And this administration could go back to old practices. Right. So that we're definitely hearing a lot of the same stories that we used to hear, that it's just business as usual, people being just sent back and warehoused.
So the term corrections, mm-hmm. that's what they call it. Is there corrections taking place in the prison systems in the state of Wisconsin?
Definitely not. I'd say prisons are further,
it used to be rehabilitation before they even start calling it corrections. But but is any of that taking place?
Not much at all. And so in many cases, prisons and jails are further traumatizing people. It's a very traumatic and stressful experience, and conditions of confinement are terrible in many of these prisons, particularly Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility, also Green Bay Correctional Institution and Waupun. Those are three prisons that we want to see closed down. And so that's a huge focus for WISM, is that we have many ways to decarcerate. There's many good ways which we can expand treatment alternatives to incarceration. We can give people a fair chance to be released on parole. We can cut down on the number of people going back in for technical violations. But back to your point, conditions of confinement is huge, and programming, if they are going to continue to incarcerate people at the rate they're incarcerating people now, they definitely have to improve and make sure that people are getting more opportunities to participate in programming and to participate in those programs that are going to give people a chance to gain the skills that are going to help them flourish when they return back to the community, and make sure that there's no waiting list, that people who are sentenced under the old law have access to those programs. So we're talking about people who were sentenced before Truth and Sentencing in 2000.
So we're going to get into all of those things this morning. I thank you for coming in. We've got a second guest, Mr. Sharon Bowie. Did I pronounce it right, sir?
Yes, you did.
All right. Good morning to you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about the organizations that you are connected with.
Okay, I'm primarily connected with three organizations. I'm based out of Madison, Wisconsin. The first organization is Porch Light Incorporated, specifically the Veterans Transitional Housing Program, where I currently work as a peer support specialist / paralegal, assisting marginalized, disenfranchised, and otherwise challenged veterans in obtaining housing, benefits, resources, etc., in order to matriculate back into society in general. Then the second organization that I'm affiliated with in Madison is the Just Dane Organization. And here we also work, here I also work with marginalized communities, specifically in giving out COVID-19 vaccine information. I try and give accurate information to assist individuals in determining whether or not a vaccine is suitable for them. And then finally, I work at Marquette University. I am the community liaison for the Education Preparedness Program for the Center of Urban Research and Teaching Outreach. And what we do there is we provide legal system impacted individuals with an opportunity to take university courses at Marquette University. And what we're doing is we're creating a prison to a college pipeline there. So these are the three organizations that I am primarily affiliated with.
You know, and either one of you can answer this question. We look, and everywhere you look, statistics are pointing to increase in crime across the nation. More and more young people headed down the wrong path, and it almost appears as if I've spent the last 12 years or so in the Milwaukee public school system. And there are young boys who already accept that they're going to be going to jail. You can see it. Their mentality as early as the age of 12, that this is where I'm going. My dad's there. My uncles are there. My friends are there. My cousins are there. And how, what can we do? I mean, we live in a society that is ready to accept this way of thinking from young boys and mostly people of color. When you've got a system that's set in a manner that there is no, Mark, as we talked about, rehabilitation and all those things, the goal should be not to want to see young people go in that direction. We should do everything possible not to see that they go in that direction. But when they flow into that direction, there's got to be something that's there that will get them to understand this is short term. This is not going to be what you do with your life. At least we wind up with long term people who are going to continue to commit more and more serious crimes.
Definitely. Did you want me to start off on that?
Yes, yes, sir. Whoever.
Well, what you just described, sir, is one of the basic tenets or one of the aspects of mass incarceration. In fact, in the definition of mass incarceration is that there's a population that believes that they will be incarcerated, that it is inevitable. So that mindset is bred into our young black and brown people. And it's something that I think that we can affect. I think we can effectuate a positive change and we can change that mindset. But the question is, are we willing to actually do the work? Or are we going to pay lip service? You know, there are some specific concrete things that we know that work. But yet, as a community, and I'm speaking in terms as a black man who came from a dirt poor background, who saw everyone in his neighborhood go to prison.
Right.
Who desperately wanted to be a lawyer or a police officer, but never believed that I could be a lawyer right. or a police officer. I didn't believe that was possible for me to do that. And I didn't believe that because there was no one there to show me.
So hang on a second, Mr. Bowie. Our guests are Mr. Sharon Bowie and Mr. Mark Rice. Our phone lines are open as always at 844-967-2789. We got a lot to talk about this morning. Hope you can join us. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guests are Mr. Mark Rice of Wisdom and Mr. Sharon Bowie of a whole lot of different places. Man, you're at Marquette University. You're doing some things in Madison. Again, for our listeners who may just be joining us, the different places you are involved in.
Well, Marquette, as you said, sir, and that's a real important position. So I want to stress it is the community liaison for the Education Preparedness Program. And we're beginning a new cohort, as a matter of fact, of students. As a matter of fact, on Friday at Curto, I will be conducting the TABE test to ascertain the appropriateness of some of our applicants in attending Marquette University. And let me go ahead and just hammer this point home, that if you are accepted into the EPP program, you will be an actual Marquette University student. You will have a Marquette University identification card. You will have access to Marquette University resources, and you will have access to Marquette University support. And I just want to make sure that
These are formerly incarcerated men.
Yes, these are legal. Well, let me rephrase that.
Okay.
These are legal system impacted persons. So let me give you a quick example. Let's say your father was incarcerated and you were raised under that paradigm. Well, you are a legal system impacted person. So therefore, you qualify to join.
Oh, really?
Yes, absolutely, sir. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you had to be incarcerated or you had to go to jail. You could have been placed on probation. and maybe not even went to jail for an offense. Well, your legal system impacted, because we know that there are significant deleterious effects of being on probation or being on parole. So all of these issues will qualify you to at least apply and maybe be a Marquette University student.
So listen, we're going to have to drill down on that again and again and again. So, because that's critically important information that people really need to know. So, Mark, let's get back to the fact that for such a long, long time, I remember the three strikes, you're out, truth in sentencing, no parole. And I think that, did that come under Scott Walker? Or is before Scott Walker. I think it might have came under Ronald Reagan. I don't know how long ago it happened, but I remember when they brought that all into existence and the prison industrial complex exploded in this nation. And so there were people who were clamoring, we've got to lock people up, lock people up, lock people up. The private prisons came into existence. And all of a sudden, we're on the New York Stock Exchange. It became a business and if you create a business, there's got to be a product. And so all these laws were changed, and we started incarcerating people to the degree that we lead the entire world in incarcerated people. You, during that period of time, you were one. So let me ask you, the amount of money that it costs to incarcerate people is astronomical. And now you hear more and more people saying, hey, we want people locked up, but the people don't understand how much it's costing to lock people up. Let's talk a little bit about that, man, and whether or not there's been any changes along that line.
Definitely was some changes during the pandemic. In Wisconsin, the prison population dropped to the lowest that it's been in over 20 years in Wisconsin, and it's still down.
So was it because of the pandemic?
The pandemic definitely played a role. There was a halt on admissions. The court shut down, and it was slowed up. But this administration did make some changes. There was a downward trend in the use of incarceration for supervision holds. And for revocations, they started to move some programming in some prisons into community-based settings. In Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility, for example, they moved all the treatment alternative to revocation programs that were previously within MSDF into community-based settings, which was over a quarter of the population there. And that's a permanent change that this administration wants to make, and they want to do more of that statewide to actually move those programmings into community-based settings so that people can stay out in the community, still work, stay with their families, and participate in educational programming. But that's a huge change right there that we want to see expanded, because before, people were just being warehoused in MSDF. They sometimes had to wait 7-8 months, several months to get into those programs. So people were just sitting there incarcerated, but instead staying in the community. That's something we want to see more of, those treatment alternatives being put in the community-based settings. So there definitely was that, and throughout the nation. So there's some things that we can learn from that happened during the pandemic that can be made permanent. That's something that WISDOM's been advocating for many years, is to reduce the use of incarceration for crimes or revocations. And also there's, at the federal level, WISDOM's got a big U.S. Senate candidate forum coming up on Thursday, July 21st, starting at 8:15 p.m. at Mount Zion Baptist Church in Milwaukee, just off of 2nd and North. Again, 8:15 p.m., we've got three of the top four Democratic candidates in the primary. Mandela Barnes, Tom Nelson, and Sarah Godlewski have all committed to participate in that forum. And Alex Lazary and Ron Johnson have been invited. But the 94 crime bill was huge when we're looking at the federal level. There was, like you're saying, a lot of resources pumped into providing states incentives to push through harsh truth in sentencing laws and to build more prisons. And Wisconsin enacted one of the harshest truth in sentencing laws in the entire nation. And we're still seeing the impacts from that today. That's had a devastating impact on communities, on the lives of people, particularly in the neighborhoods that are most impacted. We know that Wisconsin still incarcerates Black men at a higher rate than any other state. Wisconsin still incarcerates Native men at a higher rate than any other state. That's not acceptable. And so we really need to push through justice reinvestment and reimagine how we create public safety, what public safety is, and we can actually create safer, stronger, and healthier communities by investing upfront in communities that have been disinvested in for so many years, particularly in Milwaukee, in neighborhoods like 53206. So we're talking about investing in stable, affordable housing, living wage jobs, educational programming, like Sharon was mentioning before. So many of these things, peer support programming, treatment programming that's high quality, that works.
So the only way any of those things can happen is if through legislation. If what is the thought process of the legislators? Clearly part of the problem is we still have a legislature that wants to see things remain the same.
Definitely. There is some bipartisan agreement on issues like treatment alternatives and diversion. That program, TAD, Treatment Alternatives and Diversion, Wisconsin has unanimous support. And every year in the state budget, we typically get an increase in funding. There's been agreement on some other areas like expungement. There's been bipartisan support for pushing through an expungement bill that would help with give people more opportunities after coming home. But and also the governor.
Mark, hold the thought. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.
Who do you think you are, Mr. Pistol? You're never gonna get my love.
And so society has helped create that, Mr. Bowie, and then we act like we're in surprise of what happens when there's no stability in the lives of children. Is it no wonder that they wind up, you know, headed down the wrong path?
Well, you just encapsulated one of the major issues that are occurring in our country. And indeed, I think all over the world. One of the problems with young boys is that we're trying to assume that young boys and young girls are the same.
Yes.
And we know that they're not. They're just not. And no matter how we try to pretend that they are, we see that the effects of that are having in our neighborhoods. You know, and one of the things that I believe that we must do is we must believe once again in young boys. Young boys, they want to be challenged. Young boys, they want an opportunity to fail, right? We tend to focus on, let's shield our young boys from failure.
Right.
So as a result, they never get an opportunity to achieve success. And you push someone by saying, listen, you overcame this obstacle. Now you're a little bit better than you were. And that's one of the things that I don't think we as a community are focused on as much as we once were. And certainly I wasn't challenged as I should have been challenged. And I'm now focusing on challenging those around me to try and keep them going in the right direction. And I think in your new organization or the organization that you run, you probably do something similar to that.
There's no question, man. And so when will our society understand that people don't choose to do things illegally? The society has changed tremendously. Opportunities in this society have changed tremendously over the last 30 years. And so in order to be successful, we act as though life is easy. In this country, it's easy to succeed in America. It is not. And so we think that everybody should just follow this cookie cutter plan in life, and that some are able to be fortunate enough to live in neighborhoods and communities and suburbs where everything is there to nurture a person's success. But then there are other aspects of our nation that we aren't willing to talk about. And at the root of what creates young people who don't feel as though they have any hope is that they live in areas that should not be allowed to happen in the wealthiest nation on earth, right? I mean, if you know you've got people who live right now where I live in Milwaukee, and you know that many aspects of Milwaukee are now as dangerous as any place in Chicago, and you think the answer is sending more police in, you don't have an idea, Mark. And I mean, you really are so far off the, you know, the cliff that the people who keep clamoring for more law enforcement should just be quiet and go just nod their heads and not be involved in conversations because they don't have any clue.
Absolutely. We know that we'll never be able to solve this problem just simply by adding more police officers to the streets and by building more prisons. That hasn't worked. It's caused further devastation within communities, and it's actually created a system that Michelle Alexander coined as the new Jim Crow, where it's creating a system that makes it nearly impossible for people to succeed after getting out. There's so many barriers placed when people do get out, when after a person has that felony conviction, that's an area that definitely has to be addressed, including the right to vote. So Expo's definitely been pushing the Unlock the Vote campaign to restore rights, voting rights to people under supervision. After people get out, so people who are under supervision for a felony conviction in Wisconsin can't vote until after getting off of supervision. And so that's about 45,000 people in this state right now. And we're also working to expand access to the ballot within jails. And we've been able to successfully push campaigns like Ban the Box. So we're talking about the box on job applications that inquire about conviction and arrest records, which is a huge barrier to successful reentry for many people. And it's got to go beyond that. We definitely know there's so many areas where people are excluded because of that and that conviction record. And that's definitely got to be addressed going forward.
So for people who don't know, Mark, people being revoked. So the average person knows nothing about that verbiage and the impact that has, and the person who is in charge of determining whether somebody is revoked or not. Let's talk about the impact that has and why that people should really know what that means.
Definitely. In Wisconsin, mass supervision drives mass incarceration. So the primary reason that the number one reason for prison admissions in Wisconsin is the return to incarceration for what we call crimeless revocation. So we're talking about there's many people who were sentenced under truth in sentencing or before under the old law. And after they get out, they have a term of supervision to do either extended supervision or parole. And some are sentenced straight to probation. But there's a number of rules that people are expected to follow. And people can get revoked for things simply like going into a bar without permission from an agent or failing an alcohol test, or they say that they've changed that.
Failing an alcohol test.
That used to be one of the rules. Or just simply getting an arrest for disorderly conduct that's later dropped.
How about smoking a joint?
Absolutely. That could be land a person back in incarceration for revocation. But there could be even a new charge, too, in some cases that's actually dropped. So the assumption when a person's under supervision is that typically they assume that some sort of criminal behavior has been committed. And so we're basically having to prove that it's opposite. There's no presumption of innocence after you've been convicted already. And so about 3,000 people are going back into the prison system each year who haven't been convicted of any new crime. And so that's about 5,000 people in the state prison system where they're without any new conviction who've been returned. And so it's also a huge amount of resources that are being wasted to detain people who haven't even been convicted of any new crimes, who are back out in the community trying to get on with their lives. But there's a cycle of disruption and instability that's caused by the process of crimeless revocations, where a person can lose a job, they can lose housing and have to start all over again each time they go in for, even if it's just a short-term hold for a few days or a week, it can be cause a great amount of instability and stress in a person's life. And so we've been working to, like I said before, we've seen some progress in the right direction under this administration, but it's something also, it's not just the legislature, the executive branch has a lot of power too. In this particular policy area and a lot of policy areas, the governor has a tremendous amount of power in the state. The governor has the power to commute sentences. So, and has even said, and with the Roe versus Wade decision being made, the overturn, he said that he's not going to criminalize doctors who perform abortions. He could extend that and commute sentences to, for example, he in the state budget, he wanted to push for legalization of marijuana, but he could go back anyone who's in state prison right now for a marijuana conviction, he could commute those sentences. So there's a tremendous amount of power there. And the governor has a lot of control over the revocation process, too, as well. They can completely change the process through administrative policy changes within the Department of Corrections with or without legislation.
So, Mr. Bowie, it's really important that people understand what Mark just said, because if you haven't had, once you're incarcerated and you're, it's not like you're having somebody sit down and psychoanalyze you and you've got your own therapist and they're talking to you about things, and so while you're incarcerated, people are working on you and you're working on yourself, and then by the time you get out, you've been psychoanalyzed and now you're this person who is completely changed. All that's happened is you've been incarcerated, right? I mean, and to think that once that person gets out, they're going to all of a sudden be this brand new person after having been taken away from their loved ones. And in many instances, Mark, not close to family where family can visit. And then you've got some person who is the person that oversees them? What do they call them? That oversees them. The what?
Correctional officer?
Well, no, the people who oversees them once they get out.
Oh, parole officers.
Parole officers. And from people that I've talked to, there are some parole officers who really shouldn't be, because they have personal angst against certain people and they love their power. I'm not saying all, but I've talked to enough people who've come out of that and they're walking on eggshells. So let's talk a little bit about that, Mr. Bowie. And so people are aware of this. It's not just that people are willing and doing, not listening, and they're being obstinate, and so they need to be locked up again.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to agree with a lot of what you said, but I do want to push back a little bit.
Okay.
Because I think that we can't possibly effectuate a positive change unless we're accurate.
Okay.
And the one thing that we know is that the opposition, they engage in salacious conversations and sensationalize everything. And so what we have to do is not do the same thing that they are doing. So we need to be as accurate as we possibly can. So let's take the example that you use. There are a therapist in prison that will help you work on yourself.
Okay.
There are individuals, for instance, if you were a veteran, you can actually have an outside veteran therapist come in and counsel you there to try and work on post-traumatic stress issues, etc. There are individuals who have been traumatized through rape, through the prison, the PREA Act. They can get services and things of that nature there. So there are opportunities.
So, Mr. Bowie, hold your thought, because I definitely want to give you a chance. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. Mark Rice, Sharon Bowie. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Sharon Bowie and Mr. Mark Rice, and we're talking about incarceration. And, you know, Mr. Bowie, you were talking about before break, if people are just joining us, I was talking about the fact that, you know, that I you know, didn't know that there were psychiatrists and psychologists in the prisons to address, you know, the many issues that people have. I know there can't be a whole lot of them when you look at them comparatively to the amount of people who are incarcerated. But clearly, as you stated, there are some who, if people are looking to get that, it exists. So I stand corrected if that's the case. But go ahead. You were saying before we went to break.
Well, Yeah, it's not one of those gotcha things. What it is more like, I think that we waste resources. The prison, first of all, the prison budget is over $2 billion a year. So you are 100% correct when you talk about the resources that we are expending on something that is bearing almost zero fruit. So what I want to make sure, what I'm trying to do here is to say, look, if we can shift those resources to an area that's going to bear fruit, then we should. But in order to do that, we must know what we're already spending those resources on. So, yeah, there's a health services unit. There's a psychological services unit inside prisons, but these things aren't advertised. There's an educational unit inside prisons. You know, you can get a bachelor's degree, you can get a master's degree while you're in prison. There are a lot of opportunities for people who are incarcerated to take advantage of. The problem is that sometimes life gives us more than what we can handle. And that usually when an individual goes to prison, they're broken. And then when they're in prison, they become even more broken. So before you can start taking advantage of opportunity, you have to fix what's inside you. And prison is not conducive to repairing or fixing anything. So there's this disconnect in when an individual arrives to what an individual is supposed to do while they're there, and then as they matriculate back into society. And, you know, marry with what Mark just said, right, in regards to the crimeless revocation situation, that is so devastating because one third of all new inmates who are going into the prison system are due to crimeless revocations. And they get there and, you know, you go to jail just long enough to lose everything that you've accumulated right. And accomplished. Then you go to prison. So now your mind is all messed up. Who has time to go think about getting an associate's degree? Who has time to go think about getting a job that will help you provide for your family? Who wants to go and sit in front of a psychological services unit or a therapist who you do not trust because of a system that has beat you down? So, there's a couple of things, Mr. Ingram, that you touched on. Yes, there are these opportunities there, but the people who are in prison oftentimes are not in a position mentally, emotionally, psychologically to take advantage of those opportunities. And there is where we need to try and target our solutions.
So let's talk about, and Mark, you can chime in on this. Let's talk about the fact that, say I've been imprisoned for 5 years, and I've got two or three children. Certainly, child support is something that's not waived once you're in prison, I don't think. Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. And you get out, and you may get a job. You know, it's not going to be a job paying a whole lot of money, but you may get that. You owe back child support. They're going to come after that, right? I mean, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I was a paralegal in prison, and this is what I was talking about just a few seconds ago. When you go to prison, depending upon what county you come from, specifically Milwaukee County, let's talk about that county. It's Dumler versus Richardson. That is the case, and it is a very easy motion to file, and that motion will suspend your child support. While you are in prison, the first day you get there, you can file that motion and they will suspend your child support. And additional to that, right, depending upon what county you are, you can have your child support set at the income that you're earning while you are incarcerated. So if your pay is 50 cents an hour or whatever, you would pay 17% of the 50 cents per hour. So you have this capability while you are in prison. Again, sir, people don't know this. So they get to prison and then they run up or accrue these huge child support debts. I remember taking a case from a guy who had $110,000 child support debt, and he had no idea that he had been in for 20 years. He had no idea that he could have petitioned the court in Milwaukee County to have his child support suspended while he was incarcerated.
But you're talking legalese, only other people with legal backgrounds understand that. It's great to have the laws, but if people don't understand that exists, I mean, how else would they know? The majority of the people who go to prison don't know that.
I fully agree with you 110%, sir. You know, one of the things that used to frustrate me so much is when I was a law library clerk, individuals, well, this is how it first started for me. Before I knew anything about the law, I walked in there and I asked the law library clerk, you know, what do I do? And he wanted to charge me $5 to give me some just basic knowledge of two packs of cigarettes and whatever it was, however much it was. And I was like, no, I'm not paying you $5 for this, right? And the reality is that that's what you get when you go into a prison system. There's nobody to train you, nobody to educate you. There's no edification there whatsoever. So you are completely correct that, you know, there's a... The law is complicated, sir.
Yes.
Most people have no idea that they have all these resources and opportunities that are available to them. And that's what I wanted to communicate to you earlier when we were talking. Yeah, these things are there, but you're proceeding as though they're not. So as a result, you don't take advantage of them, so they might as well not be there.
Mark?
Sharon makes a great point. We don't want to... We definitely want to make sure that this stays factual, and I can speak about my own experience in the system about some of the programs that were beneficial to me. For example, I had a chance to meet with a psychiatrist and was officially diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia while I was in prison. I had no idea what that was or that that's a condition that I was experiencing before
right.
that. And so I was able to move forward with treatment, get some medications to help me to stabilize at that period of my life, continue to get treatment after I was released back into the community. So that was one positive. Another was I had the opportunity to take college courses for the first time when I was in prison. I got to learn basic Microsoft programs, Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel, those programs. I learned skills that I was able to use once I got back into the community. I also had access to the library where I was able to read a lot of social science books. I was in a maximum security prison for a lot of the time, so I was locked down almost all day in my cell, so I had a lot of time to read political science books, sociology books, and was inspired to continue on with my education after I got out, went into the liberal studies program at MATC in Madison, and eventually went on and got a bachelor's degree, two master's degree, and now I'm a doctoral candidate at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee.
Congratulations.
In studies. But it's also, to back to the point about the debt that people have, we have to really invest in those types of advanced educational opportunities for people in prison. The Bar Prison Initiative, for example, has had great success in New York. They were able to continue with that program even after Pell Grant eligibility was cut for people who were incarcerated in 1994 due to the 94 crime bill. And for people who go on to get a bachelor's degree in that program, and it's liberal studies too, not just technical fields, but for people that go through that program, only 2% of people who graduate return back to prison. So that's one of the best investments we can make, is to make sure that people go through, get the bachelor's degree and master's degree, because we see people rarely return to prison when they have those skills and are able to get these higher paying jobs. Then people can stay out and contribute to building safer, stronger, healthier communities. So that's a crucial investment. And let's make those investments up front, not wait until people get into the prison system. Imagine if we started investing in making sure, creating a pipeline to college before people ever get into the prison system, and putting that in up front, making those investments. That's how we really change things and start to reimagine how we're doing this, instead of waiting till the back end and when all the harm and trauma has already been caused. Let's work on prevention up front.
So, gentlemen, if you guys will hang on, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. My guests are Mr. Sharon Bowie and Mr. Mark Rice. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.